The country of Yemen on the Arabian Peninsula has been gripped with political and rebel unrest on and off for many years. Earlier this month, Saudi Arabia launched a violent campaign against rebels known as Houthis in the northern part of Yemen. On today's second underreported segment, we thought we would check in on the situation in Yemen with Jenny Hill, who wrote a paper on Yemen for the Royal Institute of International Affairs. She is a freelance journalist who has reported extensively on the country for the BBC, The Economist, and Al Jazeera English. And I'm very pleased to welcome her to our show today. Hello.
Hi there. Thank you.
In very general terms, how large is this conflict? What parts of Yemen is it occurring in, and how many people are estimated to be affected?
This conflict is occurring in a border region in the north of the country, close to the border with Saudi Arabia. It started about 5 years ago, and since the outbreak of the conflict, it's been spreading. It was originally confined to a province called Saada, and in the latest round of conflict, we've seen clashes occurring in another governorate called Amran, and also we've seen alleged incursions of the rebels into the area inside Saudi Arabia.
Isn't the country that we think of as Yemen today actually the result of a merger of two countries in 1990?
That's correct. After the fall of the Soviet Union, that were very much supporting South Yemen, South Yemen and what was then known as the Yemen Arab Republic in the north decided to unite, and they introduced the first example of universal suffrage on the Arabian Peninsula. At that point, it became a democratic country as a result of the merger between two very different political systems.
Were there just the political systems that were different? What about, I mean, the name Yemen is the same, but were there ethnic differences and other kinds of differences?
There is a religious divide in Yemen. In the north, the predominant group are Zaydi Shia, and in the south, the predominant group are Sunni. But in Yemen, the distinctions between Sunni and Shia are generally regarded to be less divisive and tense, certainly up to this point, than they have been in other countries in the Middle East.
Now, you say Zaydi Shia. Is that different from the Shia in Iran or Iraq?
It is. The Shia line of succession is disputed by different branches within the Shia movement. And the Yemeni group within the Shia movement of Islam have diverted at the fifth line of succession. So after the Prophet died, his daughter Fatima married Ali, and it's the succession from Ali. And the Yemenis take traditionally the fifth imam, called Ibn Zayd, to be different from the imam in Iran. They carry on to the 12th imam, and they're known as Ithna Ashari Shia, Arabic for 12. So they're very different in terms of their practice and their theology and their sense of self.
But they're also different from the Sunni.
They are, and there's another complication in terms of the religious patchwork in Yemen, because the indigenous Sunni movement is quite different from the Saudi-sponsored branch of Sunni Islam, which is more extreme and often known as Wahhabi Islam. So it's a very complex religious tapestry in Yemen, but traditionally the two main blocs have not suffered from the same tension that we've seen elsewhere.
Well, what about the political differences? You mentioned that South Yemen was propped up by the Soviet Union for many years. So are there people who are not religious but who believe in a communist political system?
They certainly did follow a very different line during the period in which South Yemen was following a kind of Marxist government. And the freedoms that were available for women in the South were really quite different. And that's been reversed since the country was unified. There is now a kind of southern revival movement, and people within the former South Yemen are calling for independence from the north. That's not, I think, to reestablish the same Marxist state that existed before unification, but it is an indication of grassroots tension and discontent amongst southerners about what unification has delivered for them.
Who are the Houthi family, and what's their connection to the rebellion in the north of the country which bears their name?
The Houthis are a charismatic family that have a respected religious status in the mountains between the capital, Sana'a, and the Saudi border. And this is traditionally the heartland for Zaydi Shia. This is the area where they studied, they worshipped. It's traditionally associated with the heritage of their branch of Islam. There was an arrest operation in 2004 where the Yemeni government came in to arrest a prominent member of the Houthi family, and the conflict has essentially escalated since that arrest operation.
But hadn't they ruled at least part of the country until 1962 when an Egyptian-backed revolution established the Republic of Yemen?
Not this particular family, but yes, that Yemen was run by a kind of Zaydi Shia imam who was overthrown in 1962 by a kind of Republican officer class backed by the Egyptian army. And there was a conflict taking place in the 1960s in the height of the Cold War in exactly the same area where the conflict is occurring now. So yes, it's correct that the roots of this current conflict do stretch all the way back to the 1960s. But the context in which this conflict is taking place is quite different now. At that point, Saudi Arabia was very worried about Egyptian influence spreading in Yemen, and now we're seeing a very different dynamic emerging in the region around this particular conflict.
I've heard reports that the Houthi are also being accused of being something of a criminal enterprise, as much as they are a political force.
There are many elements to this conflict. There are sectarian elements, there are tribal elements. This has been an area that suffered from an extreme media blackout since the beginning of the conflict. It's quite remote. The landscape is quite difficult. And the Yemeni government has really succeeded in preventing independent journalists from reaching this area. So it's not always been clear exactly where the truth lies between allegations of claims and counterclaims. But we do know that this is a kind of lucrative smuggling area. And lots of contraband goods are actually moving from Yemen into Saudi Arabia through the border zone, and that includes migrants, not just Yemenis, but also a large number of African migrants, and guns and drugs. So it's a kind of lawless area in the sense that the writ of the central government doesn't extend this far, and there hasn't been enough international and independent scrutiny of what's been going on in the area.
My guest on this segment of Underreported is Ginny Hill. President Saleh has been in control of Yemen for over 30 years. How has he managed to remain in power for so long?
He's considered to be an expert in the arts of divide and rule by many people who studied his approach to government. He was originally the leader of the North Yemen, the Yemen Arab Republic, and then succeeded as leader of unified Yemen in 1990. And in the last round of elections was re-elected to serve a 7-year term, which will take him through to 2013. And those elections were deemed by European Union election observers to be open and genuine. There were a number of additional comments made about problems with the voting procedure and the electoral campaign, but it was given a clean bill of health for that election.
And he has connections to the Saudis, doesn't he? Hasn't he been a supporter of the spread of Wahhabism?
Saudi's always played a really important role in Yemen's political life, and increasingly towards the end of the 20th century was sponsoring the emergence of religious institutes that were closer to their brand of Islam. Saleh himself actually comes from a Zaydi Shia background, so from exactly the same kind of ethnic and religious and cultural background as the rebels that are fighting in the north. But he's perceived to have distanced himself from his cultural roots. And there are figures within his government that have sympathies with the Sunni Salafi Wahhabi branch of Islam.
It's been claimed that even though there are differences in their belief system, the Iranian government has been backing the Houthis. Is there much evidence for that?
These allegations go back several years, and we've heard that from the Yemeni government and from the Saudi government as well.
That this is a proxy war between Iran and Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, I think that's been overplayed to an extent. We're not clear exactly what the nature of the links are, partly because there has been so little access in the area, and it's very difficult to discriminate exactly where the truth lies. We know that there are religious links between figures within the Houthi family and figures within the religious institutions in Iran. We suspect that there are private charitable donations, and we know that there are allegations being made about weapons trafficking, and even that Iranian figures are training the Houthis in combat techniques. But we don't exactly know where these layers of allegation and fact interact with one another.
Now, journalists are barred from entering the area. By whom? By the Houthis or by the Yemeni government?
The Yemeni government has managed to maintain a very strong media blackout in the area. There has been access for journalists, but in many cases it has been journalists who were going with the government into pro-government areas. And recently, in the last round of fighting, which began in August, a greater number of international journalists began to go to the area, and they were sent into authorized convoys into the refugee camps. But there hasn't been the sort of independent reporting that we know from other conflicts in the region.
Do the Houthis enjoy much popular support in Yemen?
I think When you look at the way this conflict has developed since 2004, in every round of fighting, it becomes more intense and it draws in more and more actors. So different tribal groups have begun to support the Houthi family. That they're beginning to expand the number of people that are joining their fight against the central government. But because it's such a complex conflict, there's a number of reasons why people choose to get involved. And it certainly hasn't spread beyond this area in the north. There's not much common cause with people in the south, for example, who have quite a different set of grievances against the central government.
There's also a Saudi military campaign. So this is more than just a government trying to squash a rebellion.
That's correct, and this is a departure from the norm. This is the first time that Saudis have intervened unilaterally, I think, since the 1960s, when they were involved in trying to handle the fallout from the coup in Yemen. And I think it marks a real departure, because up until this point, it's been very much contained within Yemen's borders, but it really has the potential now to galvanize sentiment inside Yemen and to begin to play into this perception of a regional proxy conflict.
You talk about this, the humanitarian crisis, the refugee camps. Yemen has had some oil, but it still remains one of the poorest countries in the Middle East. Have oil revenues peaked?
That's right, they have, and this is one of the underlying problems that the government is facing. Yemen is heavily dependent on oil revenues, and oil is beginning to fall. The number of barrels of oil coming out of the ground every day have been falling since 2002. And this is placing enormous strain, not just on the central state budget, but also on the informal patronage networks, which go a long way to holding together very disparate interests. And the government finds itself with less and less resources and less political capital to handle three very distinct challenges. We've talked about the conflict in the north, and we've talked about the southern separatist movement, but there's a third challenge, which is even more worrying, I think, particularly to Saudis, but also to the American government, and that's the resurgence of the terrorist networks inside Yemen.
And we're talking about a country that's close to some of the most troubled areas in Africa, the Horn of Africa. Somalia, Ethiopia, Eritrea, Kenya. You mentioned illegal arms sales. Is Yemen exacerbating some of those other problems?
Well,
and you have to tell me quickly because we have very little time.
Okay, the United Nations have a monitoring group looking into the conflict in Somalia, and they produce a number of reports on this issue, and they've been very clear at indicating that weapons originating in Yemen are significant in Somalia, and so that is a contributing factor to the ongoing conflict in Somalia.
Well, this is something that we will continue following, and I hope we can come back to you. We've been talking with Ginny Hill, who's a writer who has written for the BBC, The Economist, and Al Jazeera English, and has also written a paper for the Royal Institute of International Affairs on the situation in Yemen. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
On tomorrow's show, we'll look into the safety of the nation's water supply. Then director Werner Herzog on his latest film, Bad Lieutenant. Also Pulitzer Prize-winning former U.S. Poet Laureate Rita Dove on her new book-length poem. Plus our latest Please Explain is all about strokes. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Stephen Valentino, Blakeney Schick, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. And we had help today from Fran Jacobs, Josh Bell, and Sarah Mazel. Debbie Fountain was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow. We'll